I'm not recruiting you to go put you in the corner and be something you're not. I'm recruiting you right here. How you playing? I want you to play like that for me.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Tristan Spurlock, assistant coach at the University of Pennsylvania. Tristan began his basketball journey as a player at Virginia before finishing his career at UCF. Some experiences that still influence his approach to the game. He transitioned into coaching with stops at the University of Iowa, and now where he stands, UPenn. Learning within strong and established programs. In this episode, we discuss the coaching styles that resonated with him the most as a player, how young assistants can find their voice on a veteran staff, and the traits that make Coach Fran McCaffrey such an impactful leader. Please welcome to the podcast, Tristan Spurlock.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
Welcome back, everyone. Hope everybody's staying warm out there for those who aren't in California, like your wonderful host over here, Alan Major. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Again, host Alan Major, Doug Caputo here. We are excited to chop it up another day to be able to talk some hoops. We're graced with the assistant coach, the University of Pennsylvania, right up north, Coach Tristan Spurlock. Coach Spurlock, welcome to the podcast.
Man, thank you guys for having me, man. Thank you. I appreciate it. Some of us are dealing with some elements. Thankful that we got some good power. We can jump on here and talk some hoops.
Of course. No, it's good to be able to, one, see and talk to somebody who's not too far away. I know Pennsylvania is a big state, but still, it's a great opportunity. But then also, hey, we got another day to sit around and talk some hoops, so you can't be mad at that.
Exactly. Definitely.
So the number one thing, and we'll dive into, before you even get into the coaching side of things, I know you are a young coach in the profession, and obviously still a lot of growth for everybody to be able in the profession, but you were a player as well, right? I know you played in college. You had a great career, played at University of Virginia, and then end up transferring, finish over at Central Florida. With those experiences, one, I just kind of want to ask, like, what kind of coaching styles resonated with you the most? Because everybody is a different type of beast, right? Some people can take someone screaming in their face. Some people need a pat on the back. But with Coach, I know you guys had Coach Donnie Jones and his staff. Like, what made that transfer a good fit for you to finish your career? And what kind of styles and tendencies as a player did you resonate with the most?
Well, I was lucky. I went to a really good high school in Maryland, Montrose Christian. I had a Stu Vetter. If you could play for Stu, you could play for anybody. Stu introduced me early on to tough love. So we had plenty of really great players. KD came from there, Justin Anderson, Terrence Ross, a lot of guys who could fill it up and could play. And as a sophomore, junior, we were preseason number one. His expectations were high. But once I left there, it was kind of like a college environment already, the way he ran his practices. So for me, playing for Tony Bennett for a year and then going to play for Coach Jones was like a walk in the park. No disrespect to those guys, but it wasn't. They're not yellers. They're not screamers. They're not big cursers. That's not what they do. That's not how they are. So for me, that was really, it was an easy transition. I think basketball style of play was the biggest difference. You know what I mean? When I got to Coach Jones, it was exactly the style of play I needed to be under to be comfortable. I wanted to get up and down. I wanted to run. I wanted to show off my athleticism. And I think I definitely did that at UCF, and it was great. Coach Jones let me be me all the time. He was really big into having meetings and talking, and he felt like we couldn't get right on the court if we weren't right off the court. So we did a lot of film sessions, and I think that's like why I am the way I am now, as far as I'm a film guy. I love jumping into a film room with guys, breaking it down, showing them what they can do, what I saw, what they see. And as a player, I was really big into the Kobe mentality. Everybody being a certain way, being tough on guys. As a coach now, it's, you can't coach everybody the same. And you learn that. You learn, that's probably the biggest thing I learned from player to coach.
Yeah. You had some great mentors, man. As coaches, Coach Vetter, Tony Bennett, and you got some two Hall of Famers for sure.
We had Coach Sir on that staff too. Brendan Sir was on that staff.
Always
tell us about it was funny. We had Brendan Sir, then we had Marcus Jordan, Michael Jordan's son. So that was always a funny dynamic. Coach Sir coached on the Bad Boys. He helped right. write the Jordan rules. He helped write
Jordan
the
rules. That's right. That's right. Oh, yeah.
That was always funny to chop it up with those two.
Forcing to his left. Forcing to his
beat
left.
Beat him up. Don't beat let him go off the ground.
And don't let him get off the ground. Yeah.
You say that now, that's a foul. You talk like that now, that's a foul. You can't even talk like that in the league now.
Flagrant. Flagrant.
Yeah, you're going to miss a couple.
Yeah, no doubt. When you were playing, mm-hmm. did coaching kind of creep into your mind, or did someone suggest it to you? Or obviously you had your mentors alone were right. inspiration, but I don't know if that triggered it. Like, when did that seed get planted?
COVID.
Is that right?
Sure, wow. Man. COVID, man. I thought I was going to play till I was 50. I was going to play till my knees gave. I loved it. I didn't think I loved anything more than competing. Like, me and you lining it up. I was blessed to play in a lot of really nice places. I was coming off a really good season. So I'm thinking in my mind, I was going to play forever. But I had a really good mentor, one of my years overseas, Gene Cross.
Oh, yeah.
The head scout for the Knicks now.
Yeah, I know Gene. Yeah.
So he was at Sacramento. He was my scout. He was not a scout. He was my coach when I went to Mexico. I did not want to go to Mexico at all. I was leaving Argentina. Gene's blowing my phone up. Trish, you got to come play here for a month. You'll be good. I'll send you off somewhere else. I'm like, all right. So I go out there. And it's so funny. He was like, hey, man, I want you to shoot threes or dunk the ball. I don't want you shooting no twos, none of that other stuff you're trying to do with this in-between game. Simplify your game and it'll be better for you. So I'm like, all right. Man, within 2 weeks, I was leading the league in scoring, and then I ended up getting my contract bought off and went to China. And he was so mad because we were number one in the league. We were like 12 straight games. And he was like, I got you paid, but you ain't supposed to leave me. He said, right. After, not in the middle, but Gene's my guy. After that season, I always kept in touch with Coach Cross. And during COVID, he was the scout for the Sacramento Kings. And he gave me a great opportunity to write up draft reviews. And I thought about, man, after I'm done hooping, I want to get into scouting. I want to be an NBA scout. And it was funny. We joke about it. I wrote a report, and I was like, I really like Tyrese Haliburton, coach. I like Maxie. I like quickly. I was giving him my top three guards. And he looked at it. He was like, man, you need to keep playing longer. Keep playing. I don't know if this is good cut out for you. Like, you keep hooping, all right? Like, the reports you got on some of these guys who are better than these other guys, I don't see it like that. Funny enough, about a month ago, he was laughing. He was like, you know what? You might have been all right as a scout. You do enough. Right. You do enough. Yeah. But no, he was the one that kind of got me in my eyes and direction of going back into coaching, scouting, and it was a blessing. I started training kids, and position opened up at Iowa. Me and Coach McCaffrey, we had a conversation about it, and I was only supposed to be like a trial run, like a one-year thing, just to see how I did, because I hadn't coached before. So I did a lot of training. I was training a lot of those Iowa guys, and I was pretty much training half the team, including his sons. Once he saw how good I was with that and how well they were progressing, he gave me my opportunity and was like, hey, let's see how it goes for a year. If anything, you go back, you stay in shape, you keep hooping. I'll put you on scout team. You can stay in shape. And if you hate it, you go back and keep hooping. But within the first, I want to say like month, he brought me in his office and was like, hey man, you could really be great at this. Take this. I want you to concentrate on this and this. Man, the sky's the limit. And we've been rocking. It's been my dog ever since.
Wow. What a story, man. Yeah, you just described once again, and me and Doug talk about this out here all the time, like that's what we're supposed to do as coaches. Like what a coach did for you to be a coach, right. We're actually supposed to do that as players.
Yeah,
for our players, like we're supposed to see it in them before they see it in themselves. And then walk either in front of them, alongside of them, or behind them to get to that point that we said they could get to. So don't just throw it out there and then leave them hanging. Like there's a length of rope between where they are and where you said they could be. And how do you shorten that rope every day? Like you got to, but it's got to start with what you just said is planting that seed and seeing it in somebody before they see it in themselves and having somebody believe in you, man. That's huge.
That was the thing with Coach, because he laughed. Like when I first went to talk to him, because I was playing pickup with those guys at night. I was working guys out. Then I would play at night. Like we'd be in these runs and I had NBA guys come in. I had elite other guys from other areas coming in. And I was setting it up for the Iowa guys to play and just something to do at night. I had even brought in referees. It was like a real buzz around it. And Coach was laughing. He was like, Trish, you just dunked on our guys last night. Now you want to get into this thing? Like this is what you're
right. Yeah, be sure.
That's what it was. He was like, man, you sure this is different? This ain't like it's a little different grind. And I really just treated how I worked out every day, I brought it the same to coaching. Like I'm a early morning guy. So I wanted to be the first one in the office. I wanted to be the first one in the gym. I wanted to get my workouts in. Again, that these kids use it, I think, a little too much, that Kobe mentality, but that's how I wanted to emulate as a player, I always felt, just being honest with you guys, I always felt like I didn't get the most out of my game. You know what I mean? Talking with Coach Jones, hearing him, he would be like, Trish, you are my most gifted player. And I didn't get the most out of that. But I made a promise to myself when I got into coaching that I was going to get everything I could out of my ability. I was going to maximize it every single day. So that's what fuels me now with these guys. And I love the light bulb moment. You know what I'm saying? I love, we've been watching in film. We've been talked about it since August. I didn't be probably tired of me telling it to you. And then, you know, the aha, you know what I mean? The, I can go with my right hand. Yes, man. Mm-hmm. Yes. You. Mm-hmm. Please keep doing it. Oh, he can't stop me when I shot fake step through. No, he cannot.
Yep.
No. Yes. Keep going. So
no question.
And then once you see it take place on the floor too, what you've been working on, what you've been instrumenting, what you've been showing, and you see it happen, you're like, feel like a proud father. And I'm not a father, so I can't even sit here and say that. But you just feel, you're just like, yeah, you feel good about yourself.
You do.
Yeah, you know,
dude, and that is taking the place of the actual me competing. And I never thought anything would take that place. And it certainly has. And I love it, man. It's the passion that gets me up every day, is to be able to get these guys to where they want to be.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
No, I want to make sure to reference too, you said it earlier, but about jumping in some practices against the scout team. I love that, especially being the young assistant.
Let's preface this by, I jumped in the other day. I hadn't jumped in a long time. I jumped in a while. I don't know what. I jumped in, and we were going over double teaming, right? And I wanted them to double team me a certain way. I wanted to go off the bounce, right? Sometimes we go right on the catch. I was like, no, I want you guys to go when I'm getting into my moves. And I did I did 10-minute segment, the whole 10 minutes. They give me the ball, scored a couple times. I'm hyping the scout team up. When I tell you, I have been chest tight, calves sore, hammy. I went out there no stretch and jump out. Now, the guy, I got a lot of cred. The guys was, oh, Spur, you can still do it. Man, I got home, and my wife was like, what are you doing? She's like, you stop doing this. Like, you can't jump out like that with them.
Right.
Stretch. You need a heat pad. You don't do that.
Hip, man. Back tight.
Yeah. No activation. Just jump right out.
I jumped out there
for
a little bit. I know my limits, though, because it was half court. Up and down ought to have been over for me. Half court, I got it. You. 10-minute segment, half court, I get you anything you need. I got you.
No question.
No, that's great. That's great. I get that. But I do want to touch on, so you even talked about a little bit, like when you first started with Coach McCaffrey, he gave you essentially, from your words, a trial, and then you ended up getting that moving forward, and obviously you're still with them today at a different school, so obviously it progressed. But I guess my question is, how did you earn that trust as a first-year guy? How did you get more responsibilities and go through that quote-unquote trial to be able to get that opportunity? Because there's a ton of people who would love that type of...
Yeah, I think, one, I'm obsessed with, like, making sure what I say matters and it means something. You know what I mean? I was on the staff with a lot of coaches who had been doing it for a really long time, and with Coach McCaffrey for a really long time. So if I did get a chance to say something, it had to make sense. It had to mean something, and it had to have some value, some weight with it. I just didn't want to be shooting off at the hip, just saying anything. I was really intentional about my words and what I said. And I think that was the big thing, too, just understanding, like, all right, when to talk, when not to talk, understanding the offense. Coach is an offensive genius when it comes to scoring the ball. He's been doing it for 40 years now, scoring at a high level. So I wanted to make sure I understood our offense first. Like, before I could jump out there and say a bunch of stuff, let me make sure I know every play. Let me make sure I know, you know, what this play is called, what that play does, what this play does. And once I did, that's where my value also took another step, because I could, when we were in those coaches' huddles, say, hey, I think we should run X, or hey, I think we should run this. And that's when it started to pick up too. My first year was just being in the gym all the time. I worked out everybody from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. I was always in the gym, always hands-on with guys, always making sure if anybody needed a workout, if anybody needed anything. Then I was on scout team, so I knew what the other team was running, and I added my two cents there. But one of the biggest things I did was I prepared to be the top assistant when I was player development. Every scout I treated was my scout. I did every scout. Every scout I did my scout, and I acted like it was mine. Ohio State, Michigan, Purdue, I would sit down, watch 6, 7, 8 games. Brayden Smith loves the foul line, pull-up jump shot. He'll shock fake. Trey Crawford runs, going over that left shoulder, right hand. Like, I did it for every single time. And it just prepared me for now. I only got, you got 3 in Ivy. Oh, I can do this one.
You're getting the rotation. You got the rotation going now. But yeah.
I did that, and it prepared me for when I did get in the room year 2, and he goes, hey, what do you want to run here? Oh, man, coach, I think we have to run this because they're in drop. Or I prepared myself. I didn't just say, hey, I'm player development. I'm lucky to be here. I'm going to just stay here. Man, I really worked on my craft, and I always felt like the assistants who were there before me had so much more basketball knowledge than me. So I felt like I was in catch up. Like I got to, you know, and then you see, hey man, what I do great, they might not do great. They do great, I might not do great, but I also am really well with adapting and talking to these kids and understanding and meeting them where they're at and pushing them and getting them to run through a wall for me. You know what I mean? So I think some of the things that I had to catch up on basketball wise, other things as far as like recruiting, talking to moms and dads, getting a kid from Florida to think about coming to Iowa at that time was something I was natural at and something I was good at. And I always told Coach, hey man, I want to be the best recruiter in the country. And he looked at me and said, man, you could be so much more than that. You could do that, but you could be so much more than that because of how you prepare every day. As a young assistant, man, every day I treated it like it was my day. Humble enough to know when to talk, how to talk to these dudes, and then also be confident enough to like, yo, I put the work in for this. I deserve this. I know what I'm talking about right here.
Yeah. No, I'm so glad you said that for two reasons particular. One, any young coach needs to understand how can they add value, right? And sometimes they may think that they need to have this massive role in order to add value. And it's it could be a minor thing or three or four minor things that you do, but if you're special at those three or four things, you're adding massive value to the program, number one. And then number two, and I'm saying this just from an African-American perspective, it's great for young African-American coaches to hear what you just said from the standpoint of oftentimes we can get looked at as just recruiters.
Yeah.
And this is the guy that gets the players, or he's the relationship guy because of the dynamics of our team is 90% African-American, for example. And so sometimes we can get pigeonholed into just recruiters,
right,
as opposed to being complete basketball coaches. And so what you said is so good, just to inspire some young coaches out there, you and I, just to understand, right, that's what Coach was saying by you can be so much more than that.
And I was gonna piggyback. That's like word for word. He said, "Hey man, like too many times, black coaches get pigeonholed in those spots where you just bring guys in." He told me, he was like, "Hey man, like you're doing a great job on the road. You're doing a great job recruiting, getting guys in there. But this is you could be a great coach, and I never want you to stifle your development by just being a recruiter." Like and I appreciate Coach McCaffrey forever for just that quick 10-minute convo where he was just like, "Nah, all right, you could do that. Yeah, I know you could do that. You're great with the guys, but I need you to draw up how we go score on. I'm trying to score 100 here, so I need you to do that too." No, but definitely, I definitely think, like you said, like too many times where you sit with young coaches and they think it's all about just getting guys. And if that's all you want to do, or if that's just your passion for it, yeah. But I think in order for you to be total complete coach, you got to be really good at multiple things.
No question. No, I'm so glad you said that, man. And I know we'll get into Coach McCaffrey a little bit, but I got one question I'm going to put on the back burner until we sign off. but no, go ahead, Doug. I know we'll keep it moving here.
No, it's more kind of one we were talking about earning the trust as like a young coach and finding your voice. And that was one of the things that you said early on was finding your own voice. And I feel like that's not an easy thing to do. You explained it perfectly, right? You sat back, you kept quiet for the most part, and then you learned, you listened to the people around you. And to your point, and as soon as you said it, I thought of this as more modern day coaches, and I have to find a better way to phrase this. I can't think of it, but the more modern day coaches who are maybe older don't necessarily have the experience with the social media, with more modern player development, more things like that. And that's a good way to be able to get your foot in.
Steve Kerr even mentioned that, right? He did an interview the other day where he was like, "I don't even know how to, it's so different with the development with these kids." And it's funny, Coach McCaffrey don't got a Facebook, he don't got an Instagram, he don't got a Twitter, none of that at all. It's funny, we came back down 13 to Michigan State and he had the famous stare off with the ref. It's like meme worthy, it's all over the place. And I remember the next morning we're in the office and it's all ESPN and all my friends are like texting me. And he peeped his head in my office. He was looking at the TV. He looked at me. He was like, "All right, be honest with me. How big is this? Like, how viral is this little thing? What's going on here?" I said, "Coaches everywhere."
Right.
It is all over the place. And he bust out laughing and went back and he bragged and said, "We got ready for the next one." You know what I mean? So it's funny when you talk about that aspect of it.
Yeah. And I'm sure he's the one probably running your guys' Instagram account too, right?
No,
I'm just kidding.
I tell you that. I don't even know if he knows how many followers we got on there.
No,
but It's a good way for you to be able to, like, for young coaches, is where I'm going with that, is like to get foot in the door for different avenues, even just the analytics sites, all those different things. Like, I'm sure a lot of people have familiarity with those at the higher levels, but there's some people who may not. And at least it's a way for you to bring something of value to poor staffs that don't necessarily have that. 100%. So that's great. And even as you said, finding your own voice too. Listen, because sometimes and always, I should say, you don't have all the answers. Nobody has all the answers. Even the top coaches in the country and the world don't have all the answers. So if you think you're going to have all the answers, you're wrong.
I think that's the tough part too, is as a young coach, like, all right, don't got all the answers. Or is there a group of people that I can go to where I can get some of these answers? I think that was my year one, was figuring out who I could go to talk. I got my brother, he coaches at Texas A&M, Lorenzo Jenkins. That's my guy. And he always was the one who's like, hey, Tris, think about it from this point of view or that. And you have to have a village of guys that you can go to and go, hey, man, what are y'all running here? Okay, so or it's just basketball, life stuff. I got a brand new 1-month-old at the house. When I get home, it is not talk about basketball time. It is grab a cloth, put her on me. You got 2 hours, go do what you need to do. And we can talk other stuff later. It's good to have that group of coaches who you can ping things off of. But like you said, like as a young coach, I think the best thing you could do when you're on an experienced staff or you're not the 1, 2, or 3 is then be quiet and listen as much as you can, but work way harder. Like, keep it about the kids and the work. I always say that. Like, I keep it about the kids, the guys, and the work. And I think that has helped me more than almost anything.
One thing that I think is, I hate to use the word fast track, but one thing that maybe fast tracked your own development, because some people think when I say fast track, they talk about, oh, is he about to say how I can get to the Big Ten in 2 weeks? No, I'm not about to say that.
Exactly.
So there's different ways of using the word fast track, but fast tracking your own development is that time you spent in the gym, 8, 10, 12 hours a day on a back and forth. That probably people will underestimate this. That was huge for player trust.
100%.
You know, so player relationships and player trust. So then, now that you blend into coaching, and now when it is time to maybe say something in practice, the time that you spent with guys on the floor.
Oh yeah.
Now when you say something in practice, it's a little different because
they got to know.
There you go. That's what I'm saying.
So and I'm a firm believer at Iowa more so than at Penn, because Penn, we can't work guys out in the summer. But in the morning, those workouts, when we do get time to work out with them now that we're in, you got to know that I love you.
Yeah, that's it.
You got to know when we get to, and I used to tell guys at Iowa, when, you know, I'm working you out in the summer for what you got to go do at Assembly Hall. You know what I mean? Like, guys, now I'm working you out at 6 a.m. for what you got to go do at Yale or got to do at Harvard. And then when I look at you and we've put that deposit, I call it daily deposits. We put those deposits in the bank, right? We putting them in. So now we go up to Harvard. It's a 3-point game with 1:30 left. I could look at you and go, hey, man, you got to get that rebound. And you're not here. Like, oh, that's no. Right. Tris, man, you're yelling at me. Yeah, I know you could go get that rebound. I know you could go finish that play. So now it's a different sense of, oh, he's seen me do that. He has confidence in me because he's rebounded from me 1,000,000 times. He's brought me in and showed me that move 1,000,000 times. So now the level of, okay, bet, you got me, you feel me. It's just a different level of that. And I think that's so important for guys to have that sense.
Yeah, no, you have to. It's now more than ever. We were just talking about this with our last guest, because obviously the financial implications of things in the landscape we're in, and the eight, 9 months that you have, and that clock is ticking immediately from the moment they arrive in June or July. They have to feel that unconditional like support. And again, I'm not talking about always giving flowers. Sometimes it's got to be a sandpaper handshake in terms of what you say or what you do, but they have to feel that unconditional, like you're going to be the same coach every day. And you're going to be the same person every day. And I'm not going to talk to you because you're playing well. And then I'm not going to throw you under the bus because you're struggling. They have to feel that consistency from one day to the next.
I think that's why I appreciate the Ivy so much, because as you look around this landscape of college basketball, it's become so transactional. You know what I mean? It's turning into professional basketball, right? And when I was overseas being a pro, if you didn't come to play, there was probably a guy in the stands waiting to take your spot, and you was on the next flight up out of there. You know
what I mean? Yeah.
It was a different game. So here it's much more relationship based. And I think I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Just these guys that we have here, man, as far as them wanting to be really good basketball players, is so much more. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. you ask everybody in the Big Ten, hey, what's your goal? They all go tell you, I think I can play in the NBA. You look right, I play in the NBA.
Of course.
Yeah, from the starter to the guy, the last guy, woman, I think, playing the NBA. Here, you got guys, I want them to think they can play in the NBA, but they're also setting themselves up for a future where, you know, hey, I might be asking you to, I might be needing something in a couple years. I joke with them all the time. I say, hey, when you come back, call me. We can go to dinner, but you got to pick up the tab.
Yeah, no question. Yeah, you'd be making, you'd be the one making 250, yeah. 250 a year. You better
pick. Oh, yeah, you got the tab. I ain't going to go too much. We don't got, you can pick.
Just a nice steak. Nice steak.
Medium. You know what I mean? Yeah. A little medium.
I said that to one of our walk-ons the other day. I was like, hey, man, don't forget old coach, you know, when you're running your company, man. So you need a custodian or somebody to sit at the front desk and be security guy and check people in when they have meetings. But don't forget old coach. I said, you're going to, because he was in the gym one day and he was running 17s as a walk-on.
Man.
Just to keep himself in shape. And he's, coach, I just got to make sure I can still run a 17 and stay ready. And I'm like, all right. I said, you're going to make a lot of money someday. Yeah, that's funny. Exactly what I said to him.
We had the kid, we had Brock Harden when he was at Iowa. He was like one of the, probably the hardest worker I've seen. One day he was in, it was like July. Coach was like, hey man, Trish, you need to go in there, tell him to calm down. He's working out every day. I don't need him in July. I need him in January, healthy. So I'm, got you coach, no problem. I go in there. Me and Brock will work out every day, 6 a.m. every day. So I'm like, hey man, you need to calm this down. But boy, I'm telling him like, boy, he's looking at me. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Convo ends. And he goes, hey, Tris, I'm going to just say this. You can either be here to work me out at 6 and we'll work out for 30, 40 minutes, or I'm going to be here at 6 and I'm going to work out for an hour and a half. But it's up to you. And I'm like, bro, you're not hearing me, man.
It's but completely
that's
right.
But that's right. But again, he's at TCU now, and they're winning big-time games. And he had a big-time win versus Florida, and I was just so happy to see him because that's the type of kid he is, where his confidence is through the roof, but it was the work that he was putting in. And like you said, some of these guys, man, I know he's going to be okay because of his work ethic. You know what I mean? He might not never touch the NBA. He might play 10. I don't know. But I know he'll be fine in life because of his work ethic, man.
You hit the nail on the head there. And I actually want to emphasize that a little bit. As you said, he's confident, but he puts in the work. And I feel and that's the one thing, going back to the whole Kobe mentality.
Yeah.
I know people abuse that, but at the same point.
They abuse it, man. I hate saying it, man.
Yes.
Abuse it. But that was really my God, loved Kobe growing up.
No doubt. And it was one of those things. I'll be the first one to say, and everybody's going to think I'm an idiot and probably hate me for this. I wasn't a fan of Kobe when I was growing up. I wasn't. And he wasn't my team.
Yeah,
but the thing about him was
half and half, for sure.
Yeah, you start to realize after the fact, I was a young kid watching basketball and he was my rival. Now looking back on the whole thing, I'm like, it's impeccable what he would do and the stuff that he would go over. And my point in where I was going with this was like the hard work and the effort that you put in ultimately fuel your confidence, right? If you don't put any work and everybody's, oh, I'm going to be confident with myself. I'm going to tell myself I'm confident. Whatever you tell yourself isn't necessarily going to help. It's what the work that you put in on the back end that's going to make their confidence excel. That's where it all comes from. And that's where I feel like people differentiate the two.
Yeah. No, you got to do you do your work in the dark and then you can trust your work in the light, right?
100%.
That's ultimately what it comes down to. And you don't want them to trust it for you. You want them to trust it for themselves.
Yeah.
And I'll say this, one of my mentors, Bob Thomason, he was my first Division I boss. He used to say it all the time, and I wear it out on this pod, but you can never say it enough, is that he would say to players, like, my confidence puts you in the game, but your confidence keeps you in it.
That's big time.
And big time. I love it because, again, it's one thing to put in time when you're supposed to, but it's when you're doing the extra stuff that, so now you just, when the lights click on, it becomes a reflex versus a thinking thing. And that's when you know you got something. But I still have my Coach McCaffrey post pod question. Again, that's still marinating on the back burner, but
I know it's going to be a good one. So I'm ready.
Yeah, no, but this is one that's for the masses here. Let's give this guy his flowers for a second because
Please, let's do it. I
have a ton of respect for him. And I know Connor and Patrick because I was
C-Mac, it's my dog, Patrick.
I was a volunteer consultant at Butler for the two years prior to coming to San Diego. So got to be around those guys every day. But what is his superpower as a head coach?
Man, it is so simple, but yet so many coaches, when you're starting to look, struggle with it. It is the confidence he instills in his guys every day. Like, I saw it from day one, right, where some people say, oh, man, I remember vividly with Peyton Sanford, right? Peyton took some wild shots, but he took them with confidence, and he took them far and from deep, but he shot them with confidence every single time. And I remember one time he shot, one step over half court in practice, and he missed it. And coach was like, let it go. Let it fly. Hold that follow through, boy. Good shot. I'm like, coach, that's a tough shot, man. He can't shoot. Coach looked at me dead face, and he was like, he has to know that I believe he can make that shot. Like, he has to know that I got the confidence in him to make that shot. I know he gonna make that shot. Fast forward, Michigan State, Connor, dribble pitch back, one step over half, Peyton Sanford laces it in. You know what I mean? Like, those are the, but like, it's in the fact that after he's done coaching, a guy would suit up. It's guys that he's coached years that come into office here, and now he's back on the East Coast. Dudes would suit up right now for him and run through and do everything all over again for him. Run through a wall all over again for him. And he's just a player's coach.
Wow.
We go to practice, he lets you be you every day. You can be you every single day. You don't got to show up, and whether you got tattoos or you got a headband or sleeve, whatever, he ain't in all that. When he blow that whistle and it's time to work, as long as you're ready to work,
yeah,
you good with him. You know what I mean? Wow. That's the environment you want to be in. I've been in environments as a player where, you know, my stomach's in knots because if I turn this ball over, oh my goodness, man, I'm gonna be on this baseline run. It's not like that. You know what I mean? Now, do we take care of the ball? Yeah. Do we share it? Yeah. But it's the confidence you have to go make a play. And he tells you in recruiting, hey, I'm not recruiting you to go put you in the corner and be something you're not. I'm recruiting you right here. How you playing? I want you to play like that for me. And I think that and player development, I think those are his two superpowers for sure. Guys just get better under him, and they get better fast. Yeah. You know what I mean? You look at Chris and Keegan Murray. They were ranked 352 and 351 in the country. They come to Iowa, and you got the fourth pick and the 22nd pick in the draft. You know what I mean? In back-to-back years. Luka Garza. Crazy. I'm a DMV guy. It's crazy that he got a DMV. But, yeah, he goes to Iowa and as the 100th recruit in the country, and he leaves as a national player of the year, probably a top 25 college basketball player of all time. You know what I mean? Depending on how you chop it up, but – that's some of the things that you got. It's way more guys than that, but those are the ones that's just jumping out of my mind now. But that's what he does. You know what I mean? He gets guys better. And it's just, and they, the confidence that they have in themselves is the roof. But he instills that in you in practice every day.
Yeah. Wow. That's great stuff. That, man.
That was one piece of advice I got to say. My current head coach over at Chatham, what he says is he was formerly in the G League and then he coached in Division I at multiple levels. And he always told me, he goes, one thing that they do in the NBA and in the G League is, now granted, those are all grown men, right? Those are all guys who have children and like grown men. So it's different from college kids. But he said they always treated them like every single person was a coworker. And he goes, would you ever pass out your coworker? I'm like, no, unless I needed it. I'm just kidding. He goes, would you ever cuss out your coworker? And I was like, no. And he goes, so why would I go and cuss out the players? Because they have to feel the same mutual respect. And I'm just thinking, I'm like, that's great. And that's what he transitioned into college. And you can see there's a form of respect, and it definitely says a lot.
He's not a big – at the guys anyway. He's not a big yeller and cursor, screamer. It's not his – you probably go hear me more than you hear him in practice. He's just laid back. He's not laid back, but it's more of a sense of, like, the instilling of the confidence doesn't have to come with the berating of a player. Like, he doesn't have to belittle you get the point of what he's trying to do. Now, they'll let you know, hey, that was soft. That was some soft stuff right there, my man. You can't do that. It'll be, but as a player, I played for him. That's what I would want to hear. I would want a guy to be straightforward, tell me exactly how it is. And I think that's my coaching style. I tell the guys all the time, like, hey, you might not love me when you get out of here, but one thing you will say 10 years from now, when you look back at your time playing for me, you will be like, yo, Coach Spurrier never lied to me. But he might have not been everything I wanted to hear at that moment, but he never lied to me. He never told me nothing that wasn't for my betterment or true. And that's how I wanted to be coached. I had coaches who didn't lie to me, told me right to my face, hey, this is what it is, and I appreciated that.
Yeah, I think college basketball now, it's as old as it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important for us to understand as coaches, you have to create more partnerships now. Like you don't have as many 17, 18-year-olds on the roster. And that alone is not a reason to go off and be a crazy man either. But it's just a different landscape now.
Yeah.
We have a 23-year-old on our team that had his first child this past year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying he's a fully developed grown up, but he's not 17.
Different conversation. Either. Yeah, it's a different it's conversation. A
different conversation. Different and so conversation. I think the partnership piece is as important as anything. And when you're partnering with somebody in their own development and growth, that warrants a certain degree of how you deliver things. Right. And it does matter. It is important.
Right.
And I think that partnership piece now is as important as ever, just because our game is so old. There was a time you couldn't imagine guys being 23 to 24, 25 years old now. That's commonplace now.
You got to hunt them out. You need them.
Yeah. And you guys probably have more high school guys as much as anybody anymore, just because you're the last bastion of basketball purity in our landscape.
100%. We don't take grads. We take grads at Penn. And then, we got five freshmen coming in next year. You know what
there
I mean?
You go. So, There you go.
The conversations with the agents are a lot less here.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
It's a lot different there.
But my overall point is just piggybacking 100%. Off what you said. You really have to, and I've tried to help just be cognizant of myself of that now, just jumping back into coaching. It's just treating every guy, it's an entity in itself. Your whatever relationship bubble you have with that guy is not going to be the same as the next guy over or two guys over. It's just
you forget. You forget how old these dudes are too. You know what I mean?
There you go. You
said, right. Yeah. 3-4,
I was in my second year overseas. You know what I mean? So it was totally different. Totally different. I'm 24. I'm overseas. Some of these dudes 22, 23. They got a year left. You know what I mean? And that's just what it is. And it's just even understanding the dynamic of what they're dealing with as far as maybe having more money than anybody else in their family. Type stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That day-to-day process is a tough one. No, it's different. It's definitely different.
We competed against USC. He's 26.
Yeah, see, that's
been in five schools. Yeah. Been in five schools.
Yeah.
You know,
that's wild.
My brother-in-law is at Baylor, Cameron Carr. You know what I mean? That's my brother-in-law. They just got the kid up, James Naji. Like, it went out there.
You well, Kyrie Walker. Kyrie Walker just got cleared, so he's trying to come back in the college.
I saw that. I didn't know if he
got cleared.
Official.
Yeah, he got cleared. That. He's 25 years old. Yeah. G League guy.
Who's been around also overseas.
Right.
A lot of these European players that's coming over, they play pro. They've played at a certain stature, a certain league. So they're coming with a different business-like model and attack 100%. Of the game.
100%. Yeah, New Mexico has a 23-year-old Croatian freshman.
Yeah, he'll be 27.
It'd be 27 for somebody. He's probably not. He's really good. So I don't know if he'll finish it in New Mexico. But
27.
Yeah, 27.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's getting further and further. It's getting further and further from amateur college basketball, and that's where we have to. Okay, we gotta treat them like pros. Do we treat them like pros all the way through? Do we treat them like pros as far as fines? I've seen Penny. He fines his guys. Like, you get into a different stage. You get into a different point now, man. And you just got to adjust. That's one thing I give Coach McCaffrey credit for, man. He's really adjust with the times as far as understanding that stuff. And when he was at Iowa, he was really good with it. And even here, just adapting. Some of these coaches don't talk to agents. They won't. He'll talk to agents. He'll talk to whoever he needs to talk to progress and get what we need to get.
Yeah. Good stuff, man. I know we went from Coach McCaffrey into the rabbit hole of old dudes in college basketball.
That's what happens
sometimes. Yeah, that's what we do. That's what we do out here every now and then. We get on a tangent and keep it moving. But no, that's great stuff on Coach, man. I wanted people out there that listen to us. Yeah.
Hall of Fame,
to understand, this guy's special.
One, I do want to make sure to say before we wrap it up is just thank you for being able to be on here and share some time with us. We always tell everybody, but truthfully, we do mean just being able to step away from a busy season in basketball, be able to give some knowledge back just to the people who are listening, the viewers, people who want to be in your seat someday or aspire to be a coach like you. Thank you for being able to do that. And obviously, everything that you have shared with us has been phenomenal.
Yeah,
so it's also great to connect.
I appreciate you guys. Like you said, just letting a younger coach know, man, this is the best thing I could ever ask for. I was joking with a friend of mine a little bit ago, and I was like, man, I get to do this every day. This is the dream. You know what I mean? No matter what level of it is, being able to wake up and do basketball and be a part of it and go out there, put a game plan together and try to get guys to buy in is unbelievable. I love it.
You said the two most important words that any of us, first year coach, 41st year coach, could ever hear is get to.
Yep.
as opposed to have to. There's a lot of people, for whatever reason, and again, this is not knocking it, but there's a lot of people in this world that are doing something because they have to,
right?
And not because they get to.
Right.
I think that gratitude piece is important for us, this that constantly reminding ourselves of what we get to do, because again, if we're doing this, we're not working. This is it's a calling. It's probably less than a job. It's more of a calling, but we get to do something that's really fun, really special.
Yeah.
And no matter where we are in terms of records and seasons and things like that, is just making sure that we enjoy pouring into these dudes to the max that we can. Yeah. But no, we appreciate you jumping on, man. This has been awesome.
No, I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much. I know it's early for you over there. I know it's early for you, so.
Nah, that's all right. That's the price to pay for the weather.
Oh, I pay that price every day.
Talk about get to. This has been fun. Me and Doug have been on this now. This is year three for us. And so we hijack from our guests as well in terms of things that they share with us and give us. So we're the proudest thieves out there in terms of stealing nuggets.
So, oh, man. God.
This has been great.
No doubt. And I just want to make sure to thank everybody also out there listening. Appreciate you all for tuning in, always listening to us and giving it another opportunity to learn, thrive in the game. Hopefully everybody got some insight, got to learn something about Coach Spurlock's journey and a lot more takeaways from there. But everybody, that does it for another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Your hosts, as always, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. You coaches, keep working and keep rising. We'll see you all soon.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.